Chapter 77. Mr. Barrett hardly been in the chair 1 second, when word comes a hackney coach to the door, from which springs a gentleman in a black coat with a bag. "What, you here?" says the gentleman. I could not help smiling, for it seemed that everybody was to begin by saying, "What, you here?" "Our name is Cox, sir," says he, smiling too, as the very pattern of mine. "Why name, sir, is Sharpus, Blunt, Hone, and Sharpus, Middle Temple Lane, and I am proud to salute you, sir. Happy, that is to say, sorry to say that Mr. Tuggeridge, of Portland Plus, is dead, and dear lady is heiress, in consequence, to one of the handsomest properties in the kingdom." At this I started, and might have sunk to the ground, but for my hold of Mr. Barr's nose. Orlando seemed putrefied to stone, with his irons fixed to Mr. Hawk's head. Our respective patients gave a wince out. Mrs. C., Jemimran, and Tug rushed from the back shop, and we formed a splendid tableau such as the great Cruikshank might have depicted. "And Mr. John Tuggeridge, sir?" says I. "Why he, says Mr. Sharpus. Surely you know that he was only the he, the natural son. You now can understand why the servants from Portland Plus had been so eager to come to us. One of the housemaids heard Mr. Sharpus say there was no will, and that my wife was heir to the property, and not Mr. John Tuggeridge. This she told in the housekeeper's room, and off, as soon as they heard it, the whole party set, in order to be the first to bear the news. We kept them, everyone in their old places, for, though my wife would have sent them about their business, my dear Jemimran just hinted, 'Mama, you know they have been used to great houses, and we have not. Had we not better keep them for a little?' Keep them, then, we did, to show us how to be gentle folks. I handed over the business to Mr. Crump without a single farthing of premium, though Jemmy would have made me take £400 for it, but this I was above. Crump had served me faithfully, and have the shop he should. First rout. We were speedily installed in our fine house. But what's a house without friends? Jemmy made me cut all my old acquaintances in the market, and I was a solitary being. When, luckily, an old acquaintance of ours, Captain Tagrag, was so kind as to promise to introduce us into distinguished society. Tagrag was the son of a baronet, and had done us the honor of lodging with us for 2 years, when we lost sight of him, and of his little account too, by the way. A fortnight after, hearing of our good fortune, he was among us again, however. And Jemmy was not a little glad to see him, knowing him to be a baronet's son, and very fond of our Jemimran. Indeed, Orlando, who is as brave as a lion, had on one occasion absolutely beaten Mr. Tagrag for being rude to the poor girl. A clear proof, as Tagrag said afterwards, that he was always fond of her. Mr. Crump, poor fellow, was not very much pleased by our good fortune, though he did all he could to try it first, and I told him to come and take his dinner regular, as if nothing had happened. But to this Jemima very soon put a stop, for she came very justly to know her stature, and to look down on Crump, which she bid her daughter to do, and, after a great scene, in which Orlando showed himself very rude and angry, he was forbidden the house forever. So much for poor Crump. The captain was now all in all with us. "You see, sir," our Jemmy would say, "we shall have our town and country mansion, and £130,000 in the funds, to leave between our two children, and, with such prospects, they ought surely to have the first society of England." To this Tagrag agreed, and promised to bring us acquainted with the very pink of the fashion, and what's more, did. First, he made my wife get an opera box, and give suppers on Tuesdays and Saturdays. As for me, he made me ride in the park. Me and Jemimran, with two grooms behind us, who used to laugh all the way, and whose very beards I had shaved. As for little Tug, He was sent straight off to the most fashionable school in the kingdom, the Reverend Dr. Pignay's, at Richmond. Well, the horses, the suppers, the opera box, the paragraphs in the papers about Mr. Cox, Cox, that's the way. Double your name and stick an quote to the end of it, and you are a gentleman at once, had an effect in a wonderfully short space of time, and we began to get a very pretty society about us. Some of old Tuck's friends swore they would do anything for the family, and brought their wives and daughters to see dear Mrs. Cox and her charming girl. And when, about the first week in February, we announced a grand dinner and ball for the evening of the 28th, I assure you there was no want of company. No, nor of titles neither, and it always does my heart good, even to hear one mentioned. Let me see. There was, first, my Lord Dunbazel, an Irish peer, and his seven sons, the Honorable Messieurs Trumper, two only to dinner, colon there was Count Mace, the celebrated French nobleman, and His Excellency Baron von Punter from Baden. There was Lady Blanche Bluenose, the eminent literati, author of He Distrusted, He Distorted, The Disgusted, The Disreputable One, and other poems. There was the Dowager Lady Max and her daughter, the Honorable Miss Adelaide Bruin, Sir Charles Codshead, from the city, and Field Marshal Sir Gorman O'Gallagher, K.A., K.B., K.C., K.W.W., K.X., in the service of the Republic of Guatemala. My friend Tagrag and his fashionable acquaintance, Little Tom Tuffin, made up the party. And when the doors were flung open, and Mr. Hawk, in black, with a white napkin, three footmen, coachmen, and a lad whom Mrs. C. had dressed in sugar loaf buttons, and called a page, were seen round the dinner table, all in white gloves, I promise you I felt a thrill of elation, and thought to myself, Sam Cox, Sam Cox, whoever would have expected to see you here? After dinner, there was to be, as I said, an evening party, and to this Messieurs Tagrag and Tuffin had invited many of the principal nobility that our metropolis had produced. When I mention, among the company to tea, Her Grace the Duchess of Zero, her son the Marquis of Fitzurse, and the ladies North Pole her daughters, when I say that there were yet others, whose names may be found in the Blue Book, but shan't, out of modesty, be mentioned here, I think I've said enough to show that, in our time, number 96 Portland Place was the resort of the best of company. It was our first dinner, and dressed by our new cook, Monsieur Cardongblou. I bore it very well, eating, for my share, a filly d'isle alamater doddle, a cutlet saubist, a pully bachamel, and other French dishes. And, for the frisky sweet wine, with tin tops to the bottles, called champagne, I must say, that me and Mrs. Cox Tuggeridge Cox drank a very good share of it, but the claret and Johnny's burger, being sour, we did not much relish. However, the feed, as I say, went off very well. Lady Blanche Bluno sitting next to me, and being so good, as to put me down for six copies of all her poems, the Count and Baron von Punter engaging Jim Imran for several waltzes, and the Field Marshal plying my dear Jemmy with champagne, until, bless her, her dear nose became as red as her new crimson satin gown, which, with a blue turban and bird of paradise feathers, made her look like an empress, I warrant. Well, dinner passed, Mrs. C. and the ladies went off. Thunder under came the knocks at the door. Squeedle-eedle-eedle, Mr. Whippert's fiddlers began to strike up, and, about 11:30, me and the gents thought it high time to make our appearance. I felt a little squeamish at the thought of meeting a couple of hundred great people, but Count Mace and Sir Gorman O'Gallagher taking each an arm, we reached, at last, the drawing room. The young ones in company were dancing, and the Duchess and the great ladies were all seated, talking to themselves very stately, and working away at the ices and macaroons. I looked out for my pretty Jim Imran amongst the dancers, and saw her tearing round the room along with Baron Punter, in what they call a galliford. Then I peeped into the circle of the duchesses, where, in course, I expected to find Mrs. C., semicolon, but she wasn't there. She was seated at the further end of the room, looking very sulky, and I went up, and took her arm, and brought her down to the place where the duchesses were. H, not there, said Jemmy, trying to break away. Nonsense, my dear, says I colon, you are Miss Sis, and this is your place. Then going up to her ladyship the duchess, says I, me and my Miss Sis are most proud of the honor of seeing of you. The duchess, a tall red-haired grenadier of a woman, did not speak. I went on colon, the young ones are all at it, ma'am, you see, and so we thought we would come and sit down among the old ones. You and I, ma'am, I think, are too stiff to dance. Sir, says her grace. Ma'am, says I, don't you know me? My name's Cox. Nobody's introduced me, but, dash it, it's my own house, and I may present myself, so give us your hand, ma'am. And I shook hers in the kindest way in the world, but would you believe it? The old cat screamed, as if my hand had been a hot tater. It's hers. Fitzurse, shouted she, help, help. Up scuffled all the other dowagers and rushed the dancers. Amma, mama, squeaked Lady Julia Northpole. Eat me to my mother, howled Lady Aurora. And both came up and flung themselves into her arms. Ots the raw, said Lord Fitzurse, sauntering up quite stately. Protect me from the insults of this man, says her grace. Here's Tuffin, he promised that not a soul in this house should speak to me. My dear Duchess, said Tuffin, very meek. Don't Duchess me, sir. Did you not promise they should not speak, and hasn't that horrid tipsy wretch offered to embrace me? Didn't his monstrous wife sicken me with her odious familiarities? Call my people, Tuffin. Follow me, my children. And my carriage, and mine, comma, and mine. Shouted 20 more voices, and down they all trooped to the hall, Lady Blanche Bluenose and Lady Max among the very first, leaving only the field marshal and one or two men, who roared with laughter ready to split. Oh, Sam, said my wife, sobbing, why would you take me back to them? They had sent me away before. I only asked the Duchess whether she didn't like rum shrub better than all your Maxarinos and Curacosos. And would you believe it, all the company burst out laughing, and the Duchess told me just to keep off, and not to speak till I was spoken to. Imprints. I'd like to tear her eyes out. And so I do believe my dearest Jemmy would. A day with the Surrey Hounds. Our ball had failed so completely that Jemmy, who was bent still upon fashion, caught eagerly at Tagrag's suggestion, and went down to Tuggeridgeville. If we had a difficulty to find friends in town, here there was none. For the whole county came about us, ate our dinners and suppers, danced at our balls, and spoke to us too. We were great people in fact. I a regular country gentleman, and as such, Jemmy insisted that I should be a sportsman, and join the county hunt. Ut, says I, my love, I can't ride. Ooh, Mr. C. said she, you're always making difficulties. You thought you couldn't dance a quadrille. You thought you couldn't dine at 7 o'clock. You thought you couldn't lie in bed after 6. And haven't you done every one of these things? You must and you shall ride. And when my Jemmy said, us and shall, I knew very well there was nothing for it. So I sent down 50 guineas to the hunt, and, out of compliment to me, the very next week, I received notice that the meet of the hounds would take place at Squashtail Common, just outside my lodge gates. I didn't know what a meet was, and me and Mrs. C. agreed that it was most probable the dogs were to be fed there. However, Tagrag explained this matter to us, and very kindly promised to sell me a horse, a delightful animal of his own, which, being desperately pressed for money, he would let me have for 100 guineas, he himself having given 150 for it. Well, the Thursday came. The hounds met on Squashtail Common. Mrs. C. turned out in her barrage to see us throw off, and, being helped up on my chestnut horse, Trumpeter, by Tagrag and my head groom, I came presently round to join them. Tag mounted his own horse, and, as we walked down the avenue, I thought, he said, you told me you knew how to ride, and that you had ridden once 50 miles on a stretch. And so I did, says I, to Cambridge, and on the box too. On the box, says he, but did you ever mount a horse before? Never, says I, but I find it mighty easy. Well, says he, you're mighty bold for a barber, and I like you, Cox, for your spirit. And so we came out of the gate. As for describing the hunt, I own, fairly, I can't. I've been at a hunt, but what a hunt is, why the horses will go among the dogs, and ride them down, why the men cry out, ooh, why the dogs go snuffing about in threes and fours, and the huntsman says, good Towler, good Betsy, and we all of us after him say, good Towler, good Betsy in course. Then, after hearing a yelp here and a howl there, toe, row, yo, 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 burst out, all of a sudden, from three or four of them, and the chap in a velvet cap screeches out with a number of oaths I shan't repeat here, hark, to Ringwood, and then, there he goes, says someone, and all of a sudden, helter-skelter, scurry-hurry, slap-bang, whooping, screeching, and hurrying, blue coats and red coats, bays and grays, horses, dogs, donkeys, butchers, barrow knights, dustmen, and blackguard boys, go tearing all together over the common after two or three of the pack that yowl loudest. Why all this is, I can't say, but it all took place the second Thursday of last March, in my presence. Up to this, I'd kept my seat as well as the best, for we'd only been trotting gently about the field until the dogs found, and I managed to stick on very well. But directly the toroing began, off went Trumpeter like a thunderbolt, and I found myself playing among the dogs like the donkey among the chickens. Ack, Mr. Cox, hollow as the huntsman. And so I pulled very hard, and cried out, whoa, but he wouldn't, and on I went galloping for the dear life. How I kept on is a wonder, but I squeezed my knees in very tight, and shoved my feet very hard into the stirrups, and kept stiff hold of the scruff of Trumpeter's neck, and looked betwixt his ears as well as ever I could, and trusted to luck. For I was in a mortal fright, sure enough, as many a better man would be in such a case, let alone a poor hairdresser. As for the hounds, after my first riding in among them, I tell you honestly, I never saw so much as the tip of one of their tails. Nothing in this world did I see except Trumpeter's dun-colored mane, and that I gripped firm. Riding, by the blessing of luck, safe through the walking, the trotting, the galloping, and never so much as getting a tumble. There was a chap at Croydon very well known as the Picey Dustman, who, when he could get no horse to ride to the hounds, turned regularly out on his donkey, and on this occasion made one of us. He generally managed to keep up with the dogs by trotting quietly through the crossroads and knowing the country well. Well, having a good guess where the hounds would find and the line that. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.